Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. My name is Andy Rao. Normally, I'm joined here by my co-host Chris Salzman, but today we're doing something a little bit different. We just wrapped up our fifth annual RFTCon, a full day of gaming in Ann Arbor, Michigan, for friends of the podcast. One of our annual traditions at RFTCon is RPG trivia. And as we've done in past years, we like to share the trivia segment of the con here on the podcast for you listeners. So, without further ado, here is the live recording of the trivia part of the con. The audio is maybe a little bit less crisp, it being a live event in a big room, but I think that you'll agree it's worth it. I hope that you really enjoy the trivia. Write in, let us know how you did. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic Con 2025. Thank you. We all get $20 later. Thank you for clapping. I really appreciate that. So we're at Roll for Topic Con 2025 and my axe. We're super excited. So we do this every year. I should say Andy does this every year. He does this amazing trivia that he puts together that is totally easy, totally plausible for anybody to get answers correct on it. So that's what we're going to dive into right now. So for those of you who are listening to this, we have a bunch of teams inside the room itself that are going to be competing together. If you want to pause this podcast and go find some friends to do this together, you can, to see how well you do, or you can just kind of take the quiz by yourself. Please write in if you do and let us know how you do. All right, so I'm going to hand it over to Andy, who is going to be the... What, you want to call yourself the quiz master? Or?
I don't call myself.
Okay. All right.
Okay, yeah. So I have a series of questions here. Most of them are multiple choice. If this were less of a slapdash operation, I would have some sort of a screen on which the choices are shown, but I don't. Yeah. So I'll be reading them to you. Every table should have an answer recorder of some sort, because we're going to go through, I'm going to ask you all the trivia questions, and then when we're done with the questions, we're going to go through and I'll tell you the answers. I'm realizing now I didn't come up with a scoring system for this.
Never has.
But yeah. By the time we get there, some sort of rudimentary point system will be in place. So, are we all ready to go? All right. In past years, I've done some trivia questions that I might describe as kind of stupid. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with something really grounded, real history, about one of the founders of this hobby. So question number one. Late in his life, Gary Gygax began frequenting online forums, mostly in the old school gaming community, cheerfully answering questions and sharing memories of D&D's earliest days. In those posts, he came across as a kinder, gentler Gygax. And what was the online handle he posted under? I'm going to give you some options, okay? Four choices. Number one, Grumpy Grognard. Number two, Thus Spake Zonkuthon. Number three, Colonel Plato. And number four, Dungeon Master 1974.
Those are all good. Did you say what forum he posted on?
Mostly old school gaming forums. So like Castles and Crusades and other early 2000s old school ones. Yeah.
Cool.
I have a question about how you look sucks with users.
All right.
Yes,
so the number is fine if you don't even remember anymore what it was. Yeah.
I forgot all of them.
Perfect. Anyone need a repeat of your options?
Yes.
Okay, I'll quickly go through them, and then we're going to move on to question two. Your options were Grumpy Grognard, Thus Spake Zonkuthon, Colonel Plato, as in the child's squishy substance.
Oh, not the philosopher.
And Dungeon Master 1974. Okay, every table should now have an answer jotted down for that. Mm-hmm. We'll come back later for the answer. Moving on to the second question. I think this is our last Gygax question. Thanks for bearing with me. I don't know what's coming up, but... In those forum chats, Gygax revealed the creative origins of a lot of classic D&D characters, spells, and monsters. He shared the origins of one particular iconic D&D character and their signature spell. He said they were inspired by a young child who wrote him fan letters in crayon. Who is that iconic D&D character, and what is the spell associated with them? You'll get partial credit if you get, like, one of these right.
What if you were the child?
If you were the child, raise your hand, and you'll probably get this right.
Yeah.
It is not. I mean, so I could.
No. Let it ride.
All right.
You got 10 seconds.
10 seconds. Okay, everybody should have written down an answer by now. And hopefully, remember, we want the character and their associated spell, but you'll get partial credit if you just get one. Okay, moving on to the next question. For this one, I think I could use a volunteer to write on the blackboard. Chris, you want to do that? Okay. You may have noticed, one thing you do notice as you flip through dungeon or monster manuals through the years, is that someone has a real thing for monsters that could be described as a floating eyeball. And this is what I would like you to do is to rank these classic D&D monsters in order of most eyes to least eyes. Okay? So this one, there's a number of them, so I'm going to have Chris write these on the board. And these are in alphabetical order. So your correct answer will be a list of these, starting with the thing with the most eyes and ending with the thing with the least, okay? The options are Beholder, Death Kiss, kind of breaking the theme with that one, but Gauth, G-A-U-T-H. Yes. A gazer. A gorbel.
Two L's?
No, one L. Lurking strangler. Lurking strangler. Observer. And one last one, spectator. Answering that question might constitute a mild spoiler, so I can explain later why there's no eye tyrant. But so this is like a small subset of floating eye themed creatures.
So it's you have to start with most eyes.
Most eyes, least eyes. All right, so we'll give you like 30 seconds to put this list together.
3 points
or something if people know the number of eyes.
Yeah.
All right, let's say 1 minute left on this one. Are you answering these, Chris?
No, there's no chance I could get any of these right. So, yeah. And I did just look over and see your notes, and I'm surprised at the order.
Okay, yeah. Sure. 30 seconds. This should just be instinctive knowledge. You shouldn't have to think about this.
Yeah.
Ten seconds.
Yeah.
All right, everyone should be wrapping up. If you do run out of scratch paper, raise your hand, and my assistant Chris will deliver some more to you.
No mistakes.
All right, has everyone had a chance to list out their eyeball monsters? All right, we're going to move on to the next question, guys. We're about halfway through, so we're getting there. Bear with me. All right, this next question is about rifts. I always try to get a rifts question in here.
Mm-hmm.
In the rifts universe, the city of New Laszlo is one of the last remaining strongholds of hope, magic, and freedom in a world overrun by monsters and tyrants. New Laszlo was built on the ruins of what real-life Michigan city?
Oh. Owasso.
Howell. Yeah.
You may choose the city you hate the most.
Okay, guys, that should have been a real easy one, so we're going to move on quickly. Everyone should have jot down your city. Okay? Moving on to the next question. This one is a little bit of a role-playing scenario. I'm going to invite you to kind of get into the scene with me, okay? Mm-hmm. You're sitting at home one day. Oh, you know what? For this one, I think, Chris, are you good at spelling stuff?
No, I'm terrible at it, but I'll go ahead and spell
it. Yeah. So go ahead and...
couldn't even spell Gorbal.
All right.
Did everybody get their eyes correctly?
Oh, yeah.
And they should have them memorized anyway, so it's fine. Okay. Well, here's the scenario. You're sitting at home one day when a pair of sharply dressed fish-human hybrids appear at your door, handing out religious literature. They explain that they are Kuo-Toa, and they want to share the good news of their deity. You read through the tracts they gave you and decide they're onto something. When you show up at Kuo-Toa Church the next Sunday, you discover that you are now a worshiper of which of these four deities? And I want to see Chris spell these, okay? All right, the first one is... Blibdul Poolp.
So this is a setup. What you're saying. Are you a good speller? No. Would you please spell it?
I want to see how badly Chris mangles these, but...
You are not allowed to say them again. I'm going to get another first
shot. Okay. The next one is Igwilv. The next one is Dweeblex. Dweeblex. I, growing up, always mispronounced this as Jubilex, but I learned something. All right. Not so good, Chris, but that's okay. Sathogua. You're not even putting them in the right, never mind. And lastly, Zuktmoy. All right, so... If you have converted to the Kuo-Toa religion, which of those deities are you worshiping? That is very tough. If you know the right spelling, yes, we'll throw in some extra points.
You'll subtract points from me, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, everyone, 10 more seconds. I mean, again, you should just kind of know this, but...
Yeah. You did join the religion.
So. Yeah. Okay, next question, guys. Gamers are notorious for being cool, collected, and calm people that react in normal ways to things. When the 2024 D&D Player's Handbook included a piece of art depicting adventurers enjoying a grand feast to illustrate the spell Heroes Feast, people reacted in a totally normal way to it. Which of the following foods is not being enjoyed by adventurers in that illustration? Your options are 1, shish kebab, 2, spaghetti, 3, sushi, 4, tacos, and 5, takeout box noodles. which is not being enjoyed by adventurers in the illustration for the spell Heroes Feast? I'll go through them again. Shish kebabs, spaghetti, sushi, tacos, takeout box noodles.
Andy, would you say the discourse around this was reasonable?
It was normal. It was very
normal. It was totally
normal.
Yeah. Probably no one said, I'm never playing D&D again because of this specific artwork.
Nope.
You've ruined my childhood.
Yeah. Okay, everyone, you should be deciding on that missing piece of food. Jot it down, and moving on to the next question. This is about a pretty fun piece of D&D history as well. I'm an old enough person to remember this. In 1984, Chick Publications released a sobering true story about teenagers ensnared by Dungeons and Dragons into Satan's service. The tract Dark Dungeons tells a story of Marcy, Debbie, and the literally diabolical dungeon master, Miss Frost, as the hellish powers unleashed by their D&D game threaten to damn their souls. This is a three-part question. According to the religious tract Dark Dungeons, what level do you have to reach with your in-game character to attain, quote, the true power, aka the ability to cast spells in real life? What level does your character have to reach? Couple more seconds. All right. Part two.
Christopher, did you hand it out to people, though?
Yeah, raise your hand. I mean, at this age, I probably would have been handing this out.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, part two. Marcy's character, Blackleaf, does not get very lucky. What is the cause of her death? What is the cause of Blackleaf's death in the game? It leads to Marcy's real life death, but that's a different.
That's part four.
Yeah. What's that? All right, couple more seconds. All right, part three is multiple choice. Debbie's character reaches the level required to gain to give Debbie the real power. What spell does Debbie cast on her father to force him to purchase D&D books and miniatures for her? This is, I'll give you multiple choice. Number one, charm person. Number two, dominate person. Number three, mind bondage. Number four, suggestion. And number five, Tensor's floating disc.
And to be clear, this is what happens in the track, not what you would do.
Yes, yeah. I mean, you could do it, but... Yeah. Yeah. Okay, everyone, you should be jotting down the spell. Your choices were charm person, dominate person, mind bondage, suggestion, and Tensor's floating disk. All right, guys, we are moving on to our final question, after which we will enter the scoring round. The final question takes us back to an early licensed franchise RPG. In 1986, Westin Games released the Ghostbusters RPG. In an era when most movie tie-in games were mediocre, Ghostbusters stood out for its lighthearted and minimalist game system. People still like it today. The version of Ghostbusters Monster Manual was Tobin's Spirit Guide, published in 1989. One of the supernatural dangers listed and statted out in that book are the ghosts of two 16th century thinkers. In life, they hated games, and as ghosts, they now haunt companies that make their games too fun. Who are these two ghosts? 16th century.
Yeah. No multiple choice on that one? Just
no.
Straight up and down? Okay. Yeah.
So consult the historians at your tables. Seconds. I'm looking at a couple of you that ought to know this. Okay. All right, everyone should have written down a pair of 16th century speakers that hated games and are now ghosts.
So, Andy, for scoring, what's going to be? Just you get 1 point for each correct answer?
Let's do 1 point for each correct answer. And then we might have to make some adjustments, but because... That's a great question.
Is it all or nothing? Yeah.
Like, I'll figure that out when I get to it.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, the first question, and I want to hear somebody volunteer what they think their answer is. It was the question about Gygax's username. Who feels confident that they have this? Does anyone know this? Because they're old like me and they were alive when he was posting and reading his posts?
No.
I am those things, but I'm not.
Okay, so no one confidently knows. Then let's have a not-so-confident guess. Yes.
That's fake.
That is not correct.
Oh.
Yes, Azan Kuthan, I thought it was a giveaway that is a... evil deity from the Pathfinder universe, which was not around, but that's okay. All right, so just quickly go by table and tell me what your answer was. We'll start with you guys.
Gimli's Goblins.
Okay.
That's our name.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Grumpy Grognard.
A good guess. Next.
And my fact, and we also guessed Grumpy Grognard.
Okay. Next table back there.
We are a roll for a team name, and we also guess A.
Okay.
Grumpy Grog.
And you guys? You guys. Zonkadon. All right. The correct answer is Colonel Plato. This is how Gygax explained that username. He said, I was Colonel Plato to poke... Colonel Plato to poke a bit of fun at myself. The Colonel part comes from my always playing Colonel Mustard in Clue games because I like the starting position. That is such a gamer thing to say.
Oh my goodness.
And the fact that I'm a Kentucky Colonel. The Plato part is a spoof on the wisdom of Plato and the silliness of Plato. I do not use some highfalutin fantasy handle because they seem pretentious to me.
That's rich. Yeah.
So you guys did cotton on to that part of it at least.
Yeah.
All right, the next one, background of an iconic character. Who knows this answer?
Isn't it Tasha's Hideous Laughter?
It is Tasha, and the spell is Tasha's Hideous Laughter. Oh, nice. Race.
Yeah, good job.
Tasha. Yes, that's two. Let's see. How are we going to score this? One point for Colonel Plato if you got it, but you didn't. So, and then 1 point if you got Tasha, and a second point if you got Tasha's Hideous Laughter. So Tasha was named after a little girl named Natasha, who wrote to Gary Gygax, "Imagine writing to Uncle Gary asking for a fun spell to make your goblin friends laugh at your jokes, and you get a spell that imposes unwanted debilitating laughter that knocks you prone so you can get coup de grace by anything nearby."
All right. Yes. Yeah.
Eye monsters. All right, here we go. I don't know how we're going to score this.
Just say 1 point for each correct spot.
Yes, that's perfect. One point if you get it in the right spot. So pay attention. I'm going to say the number of eyes. If you also get the number of eyes right, I'll give you a bonus point for each number of eyes.
No.
Okay, fine. All right, 1 point for everything in the correct slot, and then I'll go and we'll see if anyone knows the numbers. All right. Starting with the most number of eyes, who knows this? Shout out an answer.
Not confident.
It's the Beholder, the classic. How many eyes does it have?
9. 13.
11. Next up, next down, is the Observer. How many eyes does an observer have?
Less than 10.
It has 9 eyes. All right, next down is the Gelf. It has 7 eyes. Next down is the Gorbel, which has 6 eyes. All right, this is where this will really screw up the scoring, but like Spectator and Gazer both have 5 eyes, so if you have them in either of the next 2 slots, I'll credit you for it. I put him in because I just thought it was funny how many like synonyms for look.
Yeah.
So Spectator, then Gazer, they both have 5 eyes. The Lurking Strangler has 2. Can anyone describe to me a Lurking Strangler?
Is it just a zombie?
Is it just a person?
It's 2 free-floating eyeballs, and like the optic nerve stretches behind them, and they strangle you. Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
That's pretty sweet.
And then that leaves the Death Kiss, which has only a single eye. All right, did anybody get like most of those right?
Well,
got 3? Okay,
good. We got 1.
All right.
Okay. So 3 was the...
3, that's important.
Yeah, good job.
All right, moving right along. The next question was which the Rift City one on what modern-day real-life Michigan City was New Laszlo, the good guy base of Rift built.
Yeah, let's go around. So what did you guys... What did you say?
We guessed Kalamazoo.
Okay.
Ann Arbor.
Okay.
Lance.
But you haven't heard our team name yet. Are you avoiding it?
Yes. Well, yeah, I think you told us earlier that you're not allowed to say it.
No, we've got
PG now. Okay, go. What is it?
Any Bruce Campbell fans?
Yeah.
I don't even know these assholes!
The answer is Ann Arbor. How about that? Okay, the next question was the Kuotoa deity. Does anyone know this for a fact?
I also know who 3 of the others were.
Whoa, okay, nice.
Let's hear it.
Blistle Pulip, or...
Yep.
Yep. They're the lobster-headed god or something.
Correct. Blibdul Pulp is the lobster god of the Kuotoa. Who are the other ones that you know?
Igwil is like a witch queen?
Yes.
Yeah, and then...
It's an alternate name for Tasha, in fact.
Yeah. Jublex is... I always thought it was Jubilex, and it took me until like last year to realize the I is not
same.
A
B. Yes.
And that's the ooze demon?
It is, the god of oozes and slimes.
And then Zuktoy is the fungus demon.
Exactly.
Wow.
And I cheated Seth Augula. Extra point. 1 extra point. This is GM's discretion for that.
Seth Augula is a great old one.
Yes, I cheated. Seth Augula is not strictly a D&D monster. It's a Lovecraftian old one shaped like a what, Matt?
Frog.
Yes. It's shaped like a frog, yes.
Yes.
All right.
You know our cult god.
Yeah. Yes.
So who else? Did any other table get Blibdul Pulp? Okay, wow, that was an easy one. All right, great. All right.
He's just going to make it harder next year.
We're almost done, everyone. What was the food item not featured in that spell illustration?
Spaghetti.
Yes, correct. All right. Okay, next is up is the 3-part chick tract question. What level do you have to be to gain the true power?
10. 6.
66.
Level 8. Oh. The specific example is a level 8 cleric, but the tract does not specify if you have to be a cleric. It just, yeah, so.
Okay.
How was Blackleaf killed? It's a common dungeon problem.
No.
So the answer is a poison trap.
Okay.
So if you got poison trap, I'll give you 2 points. If you at least got trap, you can have 1. And if you got poison, I'll give you 1 as well. That's weird, but okay. I think we're
wait.
I think we're to our last question.
The trap kill him or the poison? Let's be honest.
It's not specified. But it did cause, let's see, it caused Debbie to tell Marcy, the player, not her character, you're dead, you don't exist anymore. So it was a pretty serious trap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, the third part of that question was, what spell does Debbie cast on her father to force him to purchase D&D books and miniatures? The track specifies that he bought her $200 worth of D&D books.
Wow.
So that's like...
more money.
Yeah, so that's like one... That's like half of a Cypher Kickstarter. Who knows? Here's a hint, it's the only one that's not a real D&D spell.
Mind bondage.
They couldn't be bothered to like pick one of the 18 mind control spells.
I wonder if it was like a trademark thing the chick was worried about.
All right, the last question. The last question is Ghostbusters. And I guess this is worth two. This is worth 2 points, one for each of the people. So who knows this? Who wants to venture a confident guess?
Is it Thomas Aquinas and John Calvin?
Great That's guesses, close. But no. Yeah. I mean, you're in the right ballpark.
Martin Luther.
Nope. Even closer.
John Knox?
Zwingli?
Closer yet with Zwingli.
What?
How do you get closer to know what you're listening?
You get closer because one of the people involved is John Calvin. And the other is Mr. Hobbes.
Is that John Calvin? John Calvin, does that count?
You know, if you just wrote Calvin and Hobbes, I have to accept it by the rules. So
yeah.
Even if you were thinking of the tiger and the boy.
Yeah, yeah.
This doesn't worth points, but like, so why did John Calvin hate gaming in real life? He thought it was the devil's work. And why though did Hobbes hate gaming? It was he thought it was a medium that was inappropriately striving to make the immaterial material.
Oh. I mean, he's not wrong.
And he has a good point. Okay, everyone, that is the end of trivia, so please take a minute to tally up your scores, and then I want the win, and then let's hear our scores.
If you have your scores.
Yeah,
10 points
nice.
Here.
Wow.
Next table?
Eight.
Next table?
Five.
Yeah.
Seven.
Okay.
Nice.
All right. Thank you, everyone. The main prize is the respect of your peers. But the winning table...